Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and with the United States still reeling from a kind of war crime, this Boston bombing aimed at civilians, we are delighted now to meet one of the great war crimes prosecutors of our time, Louise Arbour. She was the UN High Commissioner for Human Rights and was prosecutor for the Bosnia and Rwanda War Crimes Tribunals. Since 2009, she has been president and CEO of the International Crisis Group, a nonprofit dedicated to preventing and resolving deadly conflict. They have more than 150 staff worldwide from 53 countries, speaking 50 languages. Louise Arbour also sat as a justice on the Supreme Court of her home country, Canada. Ms. Arbour, welcome to WNYC.
Thank you.
They're debating in Washington whether the Boston bombing, in legal terms, was merely a crime, and there doesn't seem to be any debate about whether this suspect will be tried as a civilian in civilian court in the United States, he will, but also whether there's a component of an act of war that would allow him to be interrogated before Miranda rights as an enemy combatant. Listen to Senator Lindsey Graham on CNN yesterday making that distinction.
I think most Americans want two things to happen here, that he be brought to justice. I hope he's brought to trial in federal court. He'll get a fair trial. The public defender who assigned to him should vigorously defend this young man because he or she will be helping America. That's what we do in America. He'll get all the rights associated with a federal court trial. He's an American citizen. I'm all for that. But most Americans want to find out what he knew, who he associated with. Does he know about terrorist organizations within or without the country trying to hurt us? Does he know anything about a future attack? That comes from the law of war questioning.
The law of war questioning. As a former war crimes prosecutor, do you have an opinion about whether he's on solid legal ground there?
Well, I think, frankly, the process is best served in the grand American tradition of due process. If you make a mistake in the early stages of the investigation, it can come to haunt you at trial. So I think a prudent prosecutor would make absolutely sure that the case will not be impeachable in court later for lack of due process.
We'll have another legal expert later in the program to talk in more depth about that precise question. But one of the things I think will come up is that his testimony might be excluded if it comes before Miranda warning that he has the right to remain silent and have a lawyer present, but only that testimony. It wouldn't knock out the prosecution of him entirely. And there's so much other physical evidence and witnesses and everything else that they're willing to take that risk. Does that make sense to you from a strategic standpoint?
Well, again, I'm not an expert in American law, but I could tell you certainly in Canada, for instance, in many legal systems, if his rights were violated, not only would his testimony be excluded, but any derivative evidence. So you could still use evidence obtained completely independently, but any derivative evidence. So it's a very big risk, unless you're absolutely sure that you could proceed in an exceptional regime as opposed to the standard
one. And whether we just, even for our own intellectual purposes, consider this a crime or an act of war, there are questions about whether Tamerlan Tsarnaev got training from al-Qaeda in the Dagestan-Chechnya area of Russia, where he spent 6 months recently. If he did, and was acting in some sense as an agent of al-Qaeda rather than as a lone disgruntled wolf, is it an act of war in that case in some sense?
This is a very controversial issue, I think, amongst international lawyers who are looking at whether or not international humanitarian law, that is, the laws of war, apply outside an active war theater. I think the engagement of the United States in full legitimate self-defense against the al-Qaeda operatives, for instance, in Afghanistan and to some extent into Pakistan, is one thing. Whether the theater of war can be expanded to everything from Chechnya to Yemen to Mali, I think is a slightly more controversial issue.
As a former international war crimes prosecutor, when the U.S. can't figure out what to do with people like Khalid Sheikh Mohammed or even Osama bin Laden, if he had been taken alive, try them in civilian courts as criminals or military tribunals here, Would an option be an international war crimes tribunal or the International Criminal Court presided over by the UN or other independent body?
Well, it doesn't appear politically to be very attractive for the American government up to now to view an international body as an attractive alternative. There's a very strong preference. As you know, the United States has not ratified the Rome Treaty that created the International Criminal Court, although the U.S. was a huge supporter of the tribunal for Yugoslavia, for Rwanda. But I think there's tremendous resistance to the idea of an American citizen being tried, quote, by foreigners.
Or even a Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, not an American citizen, hardly.
Right. Well, in that case, I think if there was an absolute impossibility of having somebody tried before U.S. courts, then by default, I think the U.S. would be more than willing and sympathetic to a trial before an international court, but very much by default, very much.
Now, I'm curious if you know anything about that region in this light. You were involved in prosecuting Serbian war criminals after the genocide in Bosnia in the 1990s when the former Yugoslavia was breaking up after the Cold War. Did anyone ever try to bring a case against Russia for its actions in the Chechnya invasion?
Well, I think you have to distinguish. You say cases against Russia as opposed to cases against Russian officials or persons. I indicted Slobodan Milosevic, who was the president of Serbia, for crimes against humanity and war crimes. The state of Bosnia sued Serbia before the International Court for damages. So there's a very big difference between personal criminal responsibility, which is a very hard case to make against heads of states or military commander. Suing a state is not a criminal initiative. It's a different.
Do you feel that you established important international legal precedents with the prosecutions you did of war crimes, war criminals from Bosnia and Rwanda? Did it help lead to the permanent establishment of the International Criminal Court 10 years ago or set any other important precedent?
Absolutely. Actually, the work we did, I was the prosecutor from the mid-1990s, basically, for several years. And this was the first initiative after the Nuremberg and Tokyo trials, after the Second World War, to bring to account in their personal capacity heads of states, military leaders for genocide, war crimes, crimes against humanity. So after almost 50 years of inaction, these tribunals made tremendous progress, for instance, by establishing that sexual violence, rape and sexual violence, could be seen as acts of genocide when they're targeted as a weapon of war. Really tremendous legal precedents.
So do you think it's actually deterred anybody, or don't people like that get concerned about such legal niceties?
Well, I think deterrence is only one of the objectives of criminal law. There are lots of other objectives, the reaffirmation of norms, the solidarity with victims. Before we can measure deterrence, first of all, we should acknowledge that even in our own very sophisticated legal systems, we don't deter all murders or all rapes or all robberies. But we would never suggest that we shouldn't bother because we can't deter everybody. But before we could see deterrence work at the international level, we're going to need a lot more of a critical mass of successful prosecutions, and we're not there yet.
Louise Arbour, former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, now CEO and president of the International Crisis Group. There's a situation in Kenya right now where the new president, Uhuru Kenyatta, just sworn in the other day, has been indicted by the International Criminal Court on charges he was responsible for the deaths of about 1,000 people after the last election. And I understand he plans to voluntarily attend his trial in The Hague in July. Is that your understanding?
Well, this is the position he has taken. I have to say, this case is extremely problematic for the International Criminal Court. If you take another example, the ICC indicted President Bashir of Sudan after he was in office for atrocities perpetrated in Darfur. He's still the president of Sudan, and he's still in office, and he's not been arrested by anybody. In the case of Kenyatta in Kenya, it's a very different story. He was indicted before being elected, and so his indictment was very much part of the platform of his electoral campaign, a campaign to try to tarnish the image of the court. And so we now have a country that, according to its own legal system, properly elected an indicted war criminal. His rhetoric has always been one of cooperation. I think
you'll see.
We will see. I would be very surprised if he voluntarily surrendered to The Hague and tried to run his country by Skype.
Am I right that one of his political attacks on the International Criminal Court is that in its 10-year history, all the war criminals have been from Africa? And so even though the U.S. refused to join the ICC because it thought it would get singled out, Africans see it as a tool of the West?
Well, it's actually very ironic because the International Court is a court that is based on the choice of countries to join. The tribunals I was associated with, Yugoslavia, Rwanda, were created by the Security Council. They were imposed on these countries. The ICC has, I think, now about 110 member states that have voluntarily joined, and they are overwhelmingly African states. So they chose to join the court. So it's not all that surprising that a lot of its, in fact, the bulk of its case law comes from African countries that are in the midst of armed conflict.
If the U.S. did join the ICC, do you think former President Bush or Vice President Cheney would be indictable for the treatment of detainees they approved? There are lawyers and activists all too ready to argue that they would be.
Well, according to the statute, the law of the International Criminal Court, they would only be indictable before the court if the United States was unwilling or unable to conduct credible investigations and eventually potential prosecutions in these cases. National courts have primacy, so the ICC can only be activated if you have a country that is unwilling or unable to take on the case. In the case of the U.S., I think it'd be very difficult to imagine that the ICC could trump national courts.
So in that light, how about the Palestinian-Israeli question that's been in the news? When the UN General Assembly voted a limited statehood recognition for Palestine last year, one of the big questions was, does that enable it to bring Israel before the International Criminal Court, and could Israel ever get a fair trial? Do you have an opinion?
Well, the Palestinian Authority, prior to the General Assembly resolution, tried to bring the case to the ICC, and the ICC took months, in fact, actually a couple of years, to render an opinion, basically to say they didn't have jurisdiction because the Palestinian Authority did not represent a state. The initiative that the Palestinians took before the General Assembly seems to be to try to advance this agenda, to make a stronger case that Palestine actually is a state, that the occupied territories are a state, possibly to try again to seize the ICC of that matter.
So before you go, if the International Crisis Group, which you now head, specializes in preventing conflict, resolving conflict, do you get the same satisfaction as from prosecuting the bad guys and putting them away?
Well, let's put it this way. In my present capacity, I certainly have a lot less power than I did as a prosecutor or even as a judge in Canada or a UN official. But I have a lot more freedom of action, freedom of expression, and in that sense, I think I always believe you could make a difference much more by persuasion than by coercion.
What's one difference that you're trying to make these days that we should keep an eye on?
Very much so.
With the ICG, anything in particular we should watch?
Well, we're very engaged in all the big visible conflicts, everything from Afghanistan to Syria. But we also work on conflicts that nobody's paying any attention to. Now increasingly Mali and the Sahel, but also the Gulf of Guinea, where we see an increasing level of piracy similar to what's on the coast of Somalia. So our work also tries to engage decision makers in conflicts that are otherwise receiving no attention.
Former war crimes prosecutor for Serbia and Rwanda, former UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, now the president and CEO of the International Crisis Group, Louise Arbour. Thank you so much. I'm a great admirer of your work.
It's my pleasure. Thank you for
Brian
having me.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, for Earth Day, the head of the Nature Conservancy makes the case that nature is good for business. Stay with us.